TNT Radio wants you to get on our soapbox because your opinion matters. Tell us what you really think at TNTRadio.live. Upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's soapbox. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. Fighting tyranny and government overreach. This is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Mark Morano Show here, coming to you live on TNT Radio. We are going to have an action-packed show today. We're going to be joined by a special guest in a moment, but we're also going to give you updates on the EU approving mealworms and crickets for human consumption, and the United States is edging closer to lab-grown meat. That's right, made in a lab from stem cells grown in steel vats for human consumption to our dinner plate in the United States, according to a report from Bloomberg News. And we will be getting to that later in the show. But first, we are joined by Christina Bob, the author of the new book, Stealing Your Vote, The Inside Story of the 2020 Election and What It Means for 2024. Now, I've met Christina Bob. She used to interview me on One America News Television. She's an incredible investigative reporter. She's now an attorney for Donald Trump's organization. And this book seems to be a real powerhouse book that's hitting right at the time now where Republicans can actually try to do some serious election reforms and election process. But right now, welcome to the program, Christina. Welcome to the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio.
Hey, Mark. Thank you so much for having me. I was thinking about this morning. I was like, I think the last time we spoke, I was interviewing him.
That's right. I think it was actually your last day at One America News.
Was it?
A party. Yes. Funny. That was the last time I saw it. Yeah. It was in D.C. And I guess you were heading down to Florida.
Yeah. That's funny.
All right. Well, you've written this book, Stealing Your Vote, The Inside Story of the 2020 Election and What It Means. So just before we get into the book, I just want to say my biggest thing with election fraud was how the left, if you go back, I think it was the Jim Baker Commission about 15, 20 years ago almost now, where they were talking about essentially mail-in balloting and the potential for fraud. All these decades that they waited in terms of like the progressives and the Democrats waited for some excuse to make it happen. And when COVID came along, they were just able to have mass, we can't go to the polling booth. It's not safe because of a virus. So they were able to accelerate all these trends. So I look at this, my first thing, I come from the world of watching the COVID and all that. So that to me was the first indication that this 2020 election was going to have serious problems with just the COVID restrictions alone. I'm not even talking about any of the other aspects. But anyway, just wanted to open with that. So go ahead and tell us about your book, The Inside Story of the 2020 Election, Stealing Your Vote.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. I mean, I don't think they could have done any of this without COVID, which makes me wonder, was COVID itself intentional? You know, I don't know. And that's not my world, but it does make you wonder because they were quite efficient.
The answer to that, real quick, is Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was asked that as well. And the answer to that question is it really isn't. It's not my area to answer that either. But the real answer is they were looking for any excuse and they wait for any crises or alleged crises to come along and then they pounce. So it really doesn't matter the origin of it at this moment. We just know what they did with it and how they ran the ball.
Yeah. So yeah, no, that's exactly right. And it's really frustrating to just see the multifaceted attack on American freedoms. And you know, if their policies were so great and if what they were doing was so great for America, they wouldn't have to manipulate us and they wouldn't have to exploit a crisis and they wouldn't have to lie to the American public saying, you know, you can't leave your house. The reason they didn't want us leaving our house was because they wanted to force mail-in balloting or mail-in voting on us, because with mail-in voting, they can manipulate the outcome. And it's astonishing to me. I feel like they suffer from schizophrenia, the woke movement as a whole, because on one hand, they're like, we're the best. This makes us, you know, we have the moral high ground. We're so great. And on the other hand, they have to lie to everybody to try to get them to believe their story. So it's a completely schizophrenic message.
Well, go ahead and walk us through this. So first of all, let's compare elections, 2016, 2020. What was the major changes in terms of policies, procedures, vote counting, ballots. Just give us the big picture.
Well, the major difference was COVID and the fact that they forced these procedural changes illegally. I mean, the laws did not actually change in the states. None of the state legislators were specifically passing legislation to change voting procedures due to COVID. What was happening was all of these secretaries of state and some governors were just creating new policies out of nothing. And then these woke governors were pushing executive orders that they kept extending, which it's supposed to be for a time of crisis, yet they did it for an entire year. You know, they're supposed to last like 90 days.
Still under that, emergency deck. I think with Donald Trump, if he had that chance back, he would never have done that emergency declaration on COVID, because we're still that they just tried to repeal that in the Senate, barely passed, and Biden's threatened to veto it. We're still living under the COVID emergency declaration from March of 2020, which led to all this.
And it makes
every governor and mayor became a dictator overnight and bypassed democracy.
That's exactly right. And it makes you wonder, why would Biden veto it when he himself has acknowledged the pandemic's over? If there was a pandemic in the first place, if it wasn't complete media hype where they were killing everybody by forcing them into nursing homes and their own policies were making the whole situation much more dangerous. And oh, by the way, the death counters, can we actually have an accurate death count at this point?
No, it's funny you say that. We're getting off topic, but this is fun.
No, we're not even close to topic.
Yeah. CNN doctor Leona Wen was on CNN and did an op-ed for the Washington Post about how people with gunshots are being listed. She's now the biggest voice out there saying COVID deaths have been wildly exaggerated, and she's facing major blowback from her colleagues at CNN. It's funny to watch. There's an example of someone who's made a 360. But anyway, you're exactly right. I mean, this really, there's going to be historians looking at whether this even qualified as a pandemic.
Yeah, I won't be around in 100 years, but I would love to read those findings. So the book is, you know, my journey as an investigative journalist through Election Day up until past the 2021 election. It's kind of like a whole year cycle of what happened. And I just take the reader on my whole process. I have hundreds and hundreds of conversations with elected leaders, mostly at the state or local level. I interviewed many witnesses. I interviewed poll workers and challengers, volunteers, city clerks, county clerks, you know, everybody. And I just tried to piece together what happened, because on election night, I honestly was not expecting any cheating. And I know that sounds naive because we were all wondering it beforehand. But I just thought Donald Trump was so popular and, you know, his rallies were enormous. He didn't have 100,000 people show up to his rallies right before the election. And Joe Biden couldn't fill a high school gymnasium. So I just thought
basement.
I'm sure they're going to cheat, but there's no possible way they can cheat enough to beat Donald Trump. And I was wrong. And so I just kind of take the reader through my moment, which was, of course, on election night, going, oh, my gosh, they're cheating. They call Arizona early. They stop the counting. You know, all of the signs that all of us saw, you know, that was really my wake up moment, too.
Were you led to believe, like, 2 a.m. that Donald Trump was ahead and was probably going to win, a lot of people did, and then they went to bed and then they woke up the next day and all these new tallies came in that showed Trump behind?
Well, the tallies showing Trump behind didn't come in until the 7th. I mean, Donald Trump was up on the 3rd, the 4th, the 5th, and the 6th. He was still winning, which is why they didn't call the race. And so, you know, conveniently, it takes 4 days to count all these extra ballots, and it's not until right after Joe Biden takes the lead that they're like, okay, now we can call the race. It's like, wait a second, you know, it's insulting to our intelligence. And then the media, I talk a little bit about the media, but I just couldn't get over the extent that they would lie, like blatantly lie. There is no evidence of voter fraud. This is the most secure election in U.S. history. Joe Biden is the most popular president in U.S. history. You know, the talking points on every network were exactly the same, and none of them were true. They weren't even close to being true. They weren't even reputable, you know, even close. Like, there's no evidence of voter fraud. Well, yes, there is. I mean, the fact that they shut down counting and waited for 4 days to me is evidence. You know, you might, it's not conclusive, but rarely, you know, I'm a lawyer and I approach this from a legal perspective. And most cases, most, whether they're criminal or civil litigation cases, most cases are built on evidence, right? And it's not one smoking gun. It's maybe if a guy shoots someone in the face and you find a video of him shooting that person in the face, okay, the video is pretty conclusive, right? But the vast majority of cases are built with a lot of evidence. Here's an email that they sent saying they were going to the gas station at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, here's bank receipts showing that they had a large deposit. You know, no one of those pieces is conclusive, but you put the picture together and you come up with a murder, you know, whatever it is, whatever case you're trying to bring. Very rarely is there one piece of conclusive evidence. And so that's what the media was trying to get the public to look for. They were trying to get the public to look for one piece of conclusive evidence. And that doesn't really exist, at least not yet. It's, you have to go through everything. You have to go through what they did days before the election. You have to look at their election operation procedures. You have to look at the fact that they were kicking Republican voters out. You have to look at what they did after November 3rd. Why did they stop the count? You know, you piece it all together. You talk to people on the ground. You see they're dumping out ballots from Republican precincts and all this stuff to put the picture together. And it's a pretty clear picture that they cheated. I just think it's a head fake for them to try to get the public to expect a smoking gun, even though, you know, you can argue the video at State Farm Arena of them kicking everybody out and then pulling out secret ballots and counting them multiple times is pretty conclusive. But, you know, they're just deny.
What about like the mainstream media talking point of, well, you guys had your day in court and they were dismissed and you never got anywhere in court? What about that whole argument? So explain that process. That. Yeah,
we've never had our day in court. Every single judge threw the cases out before anybody was ever allowed to present evidence. There was never a case up until Carrie Lake's case in 2022. There was never a case where anybody, whether it was Donald Trump, his campaign, voters, you know, grassroots organizations that were all up in arms saying, whoa, you cheated, you lied and manipulated our local elections. There was not a single judge that allowed the case to be presented. They threw it out on standing. They threw it out on mootness. They threw it out on timing. Every single one of them was thrown out on a procedural ground, and nobody was ever allowed to present evidence to court. So it's infuriating and flat out wrong. It's a lie to say they presented evidence. The courts didn't find any evidence. The court says there is no evidence of voter fraud. None of that has ever been true.
Well, yeah. And that's you constantly hear that as a pushback. All right. So if you're looking at the 2020 election in terms of fraud, was it machines? Was it mail-in? Was it the process? Yeah. I mean, where would you pinpoint? Can you give percentages to what, you know, in terms of voter fraud or in terms of voter irregularities?
Yeah. Well, it's going to be different in every state. And I think they take advantage of, you know, the holes in the problem on our side is Republicans also aren't known for volunteering and working the polls. You know, I talked to many, many, many poll workers throughout this process, and particularly in Detroit. Detroit's my favorite example because it's so egregious. But I talked to several poll workers in Detroit who said when they were on shift, they were outnumbered 100-1. There were 100 Democrat volunteers for every Republican that was there. And we can complain about fraud. And don't get me wrong, I completely believe there's fraud, and I give you the stats and all that in the book. But we can complain about fraud. We can complain about machines. We can complain about all of that. But if they're outworking us 100-1, that's the first place we need to start improving, right? So, but to your question, was it machines? Was it mail-in ballots? It was all of it. And I think in different areas, they use different ways. Now, I've never had an opportunity to examine the machines. You know, I'm a lawyer. I'm not a mathematician. That's not my area of expertise. Yeah. So I don't pretend to, and I don't quite honestly go deep into the machines just because it's not my area of expertise. I will say the machines in and of themselves don't cheat. People have to cheat. People have to program the machines, and people have to make the choice to manipulate the election through the machines. I mean, that seems obvious, but I think people forget that. I think the whole idea of machines have taken on this idea of, oh, it's these machines have taken over our election. It's people using the machines to manipulate it. Right. So whether you want to cheat by ballot stuffing or cheat by inserting a thumb drive and switching the outcome, to me, the problem is the people. And I think the easiest way to, I shouldn't say easy, it's not going to be easy, but it's what we're going to do to counteract that is we have to have more people on site at every moment of the chain of custody, because it's harder to cheat when you have Republican poll workers standing right next to you and you want to drop in 10,000 ballots to the tally. Well, it's harder, you know? So my conclusion is this is an all hands on deck moment. We can't look to Congress. We can't look to our state legislators, although I fully believe we should be working with them and trying to solve this problem, but it's not going to be, you know, one person or one legislative body that's going to save us here. It is going to take all of us working on election day, on election season, this whole new game we get to play. Thank you, COVID. We have to secure our election ourselves.
Well, we're going to take a break here in a minute, but in terms of the midterm, the ones that just passed 2022, did you see a lot of positive signs that things were improving, or was it more of the same, or was it getting worse?
I think there were some good improvements, but not enough. And Arizona is the perfect example. I believe wholeheartedly Carrie Lake won Arizona. I mean, I don't think anybody can look at that and go, well, you know, maybe Katie Hobbs won. No, she didn't. So I obviously Arizona is a problem. You know, we need to work on Arizona. And I think there are areas around the country where that's probably true. So there are good pieces, but I think if we don't rapidly increase our efforts to correct this, we'll run out of time before 24. So that's why this is my clarion call. I want to educate everybody on what's happening so that you can find an area that bothers you the most, whether it's the voter rolls, whether it's ballot stuffing, whether it's mail-in ballots, whatever it is that you think is just the worst part, get involved and help solve the problem there.
All right. This is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. We're talking to Christina Bobb, the author of Stealing Your Vote, The Inside Story of the 2020 Election and What It Means for 2024. We'll be right back after these messages with a little bit more of Christina. Thanks.
You should hear what Jesse Zurawell is talking about.
What is being missed in the cult of personality that's built up around him, especially with regard to his acquisition of Twitter? Once he took the helm at Twitter, a lot of people fell in line behind him, cheering him on as a free speech savior, flocking to Twitter to test out whether free speech had indeed been saved by Elon Musk, and flocking to Twitter to try to get his attention in any way they could. And what gets missed in that narrative that's been focused on by corporate media and alternative media alike is, again, the operations he's involved with and has been involved with. So I'm thinking of, again, Neuralink, SpaceX, and Starlink. I see Elon Musk mostly as a front man who's been groomed and put into position over many years. And what he's doing as luring people into a transhumanist future and data mining, particularly through Twitter in service of that.
Jesse Zurawell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio. A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. You're with Mark Morano on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're back here with special guest Christina Bobb, author of Stealing Your Vote, The Inside Story of the 2020 Election and What It Means for 2024. Let me ask you about Dinesh D'Souza's 2,000 Mules.
Yeah.
Do you get into that in the book? Is that a big part of it? Should the public be convinced by that, or are there holes in that theory? I mean, or is that just one of the many aspects of the voter fraud?
I think that's one of the many aspects of the voter fraud. I think True the Vote did a fantastic job investigating all of that. I thought the movie was fascinating. I mention it in the book, but it's, you know, one or two sentences. That's not the primary, you know, that wasn't my investigation. That was their investigation. So I mention it for the readers to make sure that they're aware of it. But the book doesn't cover that. The book, my investigation really focused on the politics of the election. So the way I like to summarize it, if I could summarize it in one sentence, is Democrats cheated and Republicans covered it up. And so I go into, and it quite honestly largely focuses on the Republican cover up, because we can control that. We conservatives can control that. We can work within our own party. We can make enough change on our own side to correct this. But people don't realize the extent that Republicans were involved. So, that was the most infuriating revelation for me, was that we could have corrected the 2020 election in November, December of 2020. We could have done it before January 20th when, you know, President Trump had to leave office, but it was the Republicans that blocked us. So
go a little deeper into that. Like, what, assuming Republicans were cooperative, what could have happened and what should have happened?
They could have opened criminal investigations, conducted the investigation. We had a lot of the evidence. A lot of the evidence was readily available, but they refused to do it. I mean, think about it. The Arizona Attorney General is a Republican. Georgia Attorney General is a Republican. The district attorney in Racine and Green Bay, where there was massive fraud in Wisconsin, they're Republicans. I mean, Republicans were in key positions. The state legislatures in Arizona, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Georgia are all Republican. That's Republican led. So they very easily could have said, no, we think there's a problem here. The Arizona Senate tried to do that. They got pretty far, but they were never given all of the information, despite the fact that multiple courts ruled that their subpoenas were lawful. And the parties involved just thumbed their nose at them and said, F you, we're not turning over the splunk logs. We're not turning over the administrative passwords to the machine. So people think the Arizona audit was complete. It was not. It was a great start, and it looked at the ballots and it looked at the chain of custody issues, which showed there was massive problems. And it looked at the number of problem votes, which is something like 300,000 votes when the difference is 10,000, you know, around 10 to 11,000 is the margin of victory. And the Arizona audit in and of itself should have invalidated the election. But it wasn't even complete. The Senate didn't even get everything that they wanted. So it had Republicans all just unified and said, we're not going to let this happen. They could have corrected all of the state, every single state. Maybe Nevada might have been hard because it was complete Democrat, but every other state.
Well, let me ask you, like Fox News, I know Donald Trump was upset. What happened with that? I guess it was the Arizona call. And it was kind of like, what was the guy's name? Bill, what was his name?
I don't remember. I know who you're talking about, though. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, his whole argument was, well, you know, we called it because it's all, he gave an argument. It's like, why don't you just call California then at like 8 o'clock at night Eastern?
Because
you know what's going to go for Biden. Anyway, he's kind of like, well, we were, confident isn't the same as you actually have the results. And it was seemed to be a different standard. What happened there in your view? And the larger question really is, why were the Republicans so uncooperative? What's going on there? What's their agenda? Yeah. Was this an anti-Trump faction? Are they just because Trump's still considered the outsider? They didn't want to help him?
Well, so on the Arizona call, my assessment, you know, I have the same evidence that everybody else has, but my assessment was they had just called Florida and they were trying really, really hard to flip Florida through Broward County. If you remember, it took them a while to call Florida and they eventually did. And I just think that the executives at Fox were like, oh, we can help slow Trump's momentum. So they called Arizona to kind of throw the whole thing off, which it doesn't actually affect the election, but it's just weird. You know, I think it highlights the media campaign, the media's role in trying to make the American public believe that this was a legitimate election. They were actively trying to manipulate the public. Yeah.
His name was Chris Steigerwalt. I can never say that name. Chris Steigerwalt. That's who was, the Fox News political editor. He was later fired after that. But yeah. I just thought I've read all this. It was just the most bizarre justifications for calling Arizona
it is
again.
Weird.
You may as well just call, you know, just right. New York for a guy and Biden. Why don't you just call it at 4 p.m. on election day? You know, it's going to happen.
Right. No, you're exactly right. So I don't know that actually had a role in changing the election other than it kind of outed the media as they had an agenda, you know? So I don't know. That's the way I see that. But as far as why Republicans were covering it up, I think it's a mix. Of course, you had the Never Trump faction, which would gladly side with Democrats, completely abandoning their constituents for their own personal glory. And so those were the shameless ones. But even more than that, what I found was the Republican Party over the last several decades, and I don't mean the RNC, although you could probably include them in this. I mean the people and the politicians and the whole makeup of the Republican Party for the last several decades has become the party of cowardice. They have become the party go along to get along. They're not fighters. They don't stand up and argue and push back when Democrats are trying to do something crazy. They compromise. They like to play nice, and they will compromise on important issues just because they're not fighters. It's not a party of fighters, and we needed fighters. And so I think I largely blame the Republican Party for this collapse because it takes both sides pulling their weight to make our government work, and the Republicans didn't. And so when you have a bunch of cowards, like kind of wimpy people who just go along to get along in all of these state offices, and suddenly the spotlight's on them, you know, you're the attorney or you're the district attorney for Racine, Wisconsin, which is a slight majority conservative. And the entire world is looking at you going, are you going to fight for, there were charges referred. The Racine County Sheriff referred charges of election fraud, the statute election fraud, to the district attorney there saying that WEC, the Wisconsin Election Commission, committed election fraud in the way that they administered the election in Wisconsin. And the Republican district attorney refused to prosecute. Now, is she corrupt? There's a bunch of people that are like, oh, maybe she's a Soros plant, which there's probably true. George Soros has been funding district attorney races forever. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they put a Soros. I don't know that I didn't do that part of the research. What I can tell you is she didn't prosecute, and she should have prosecuted. Her constituents elected her to prosecute crimes, and she just refused to do it.
What about Governor Kemp in Georgia? And I'd read reports that his, I guess it was attorney general, someone was in bed with the voting machine companies. And also he seemed very hostile, if you will, to charges of election fraud. What's his story? And I hear he's now running for president, which is fascinating, Governor Kemp.
Oh, awesome. That'll be fun. I can't wait to race him. That'll be great. Yes. I mean, all of your suspicions, it seems like you have the same suspicions I do. So it was, I think it was his chief of staff or his deputy chief of staff. And I apologize. I don't remember off the top of my head, but it is in the book that did work with I think he's got folks from multiple voting machine companies, which is a nice way to kind of secure anything you might want to get from these voting machines. But I do have a lot of suspicions about Brian Kemp. And I had, you know, his office was not, I actually reached out to Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State, trying to get some official comments, and they refused to work with me on this. So I don't have any direct information from them. So I had to rely on court documents and the pleadings and, you know, just public record stuff for Georgia. And there's a lot of questions just in the documents, you know, and I talk a little bit about the case with Stacey Abrams. You know, Stacey Abrams accused Brian Kemp of voter fraud and all this stuff back in 2018. Yes. And a lot of the arguments, I pulled the complaint from that case, and a lot of her arguments are the same arguments that Republicans were making in 2020. And so it's kind of head scratching because I'm like, okay, you have Democrats accusing him of these things. You have Republicans accusing him of these things, and yet no one's allowed to do an independent audit or investigation. So, you know, the only folks that investigated were from the Georgia government and mostly from the Secretary of State's office, who would have benefited from the cheating. So Yes. I mean, there's a question mark over Georgia. I give some concrete examples to help you come draw whatever conclusion you want to come to. But yeah, there are definitely question marks over Georgia.
Well, it always just shocked me how Georgia somehow becoming a blue state, or at least how the governor can win by such margins, but then the senator can't. You know, it's very strange.
Yeah, isn't that interesting I was so disappointed. I had to turn the manuscript in before this midterm, so I wasn't able to mention it. But I thought it was very interesting, the point you just made, that the state officials and the ones who seem to be working together, Brian Kemp, Brad Raffensperger, and Christopher Carr, the attorney general, all Republicans, all state leaders, currently incumbents, they all won their races just enough to avoid a runoff in the primary. I'm sorry, talking about the primary. Not the primary, the general election. They all won their races at like 51, 52% so that they could avoid a runoff. Yet the U.S. Senate seat, which is a federal position, Herschel Walker had to go to a runoff, and then the Democrat wins the Senate seat. It's a repeat of what happened to that seat in 2020. I just find it interesting that the voters in Georgia went to the polls and voted straight red for the state leaders, but blue for the federal position that was on the ballot. You know, I just think that's odd.
All right. Well, now this might be uncomfortable or somewhat. What about Mike Pence? What about his role in all of this?
Yeah.
And now he, of course, is running for president. I mean, before you say anything, I've actually tweeted recently that the most important thing Americans can do is keep Mike Pence away from any elected office again. I'm just giving you my bias. And it has nothing to do with the election. To me, if you read his most recent book, and I've read all the excerpts, he had no problem essentially with mask mandates, COVID lockdowns, Anthony Fauci, the public health authoritarianism. He posed with him. He writes in his book, he rewrites history. He brags about how he got ventilators to hospitals without mentioning that the ventilators were killing people and the doctors ended up stopping the practice that was being pushed by politicians. He is the most clueless man in the history of politics when it comes to COVID, just factually wrong and completely on the side of Anthony Fauci. And his book, you know, landed with a, you know, like a feather. No one paid attention. But if you actually paid attention, it's quite a shocking book. But sorry, I didn't mean to throw in my bias and prejudice your answer.
No, you're right.
What about Mike Pence's role?
You're absolutely right. No, I think you're exactly right. And I think we, being the Trump campaign, are going to have a field day with that when he actually tries to take on Donald Trump. So, no, your assessment is completely right. At best, Mike Pence is a complete coward who has no leadership skills for what we need right now, because we need someone with a backbone who can stand up to people who are mean, you know?
Yes.
And he just can't do that. He just doesn't have the ability. At worst, he's completely compromised. I think he's probably somewhere in the middle. I don't think he's completely compromised, but I would say I think his true north, or, you know, his internal compass of what our nation needs, is probably compromised. But I don't think he himself is he's not a Joe Biden. Right.
I'm not saying he's a liberal. He's just an establishment person who's personality. He's not going to shake any, he's not going to rattle anything. He's not going to do, he's just a guy who goes along. Yes.
Yeah,
I mean, just what he did with COVID is a snapshot. But anyway, in terms of his role in election, helpful leading up to?
No, no.
I don't know what was going on behind the scenes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I lay out the whole story the moment I joined Rudy Giuliani's legal team to, you know, January 6th. I lay the whole thing out of all of our attempts to reach out to Mike Pence, to work with him. You know, what was he allowed to do? What were we recommending? You know, of course, we were recommending that he return the electors to the states. Four states had asked him to return their slate of electors back to them so they could reconsider. And we were recommending he just do what the states are asking him to do. Gave him plenty of legal authority and legal ground to do that. And, you know, we all saw him fail. Like, he just completely failed as a leader. All the dirty details of those conversations are in the beginning of the book. So I think he's a complete coward. I don't think he is good for America. I think he's part of the problem. I mean, he's been in office long enough to be the one that made the Republican Party the party of cowards. Actually, the original title of the book was Cowardice and Corruption, where I was comparing and contrasting cowards on the Republican side with corruption on the Democrat side. We changed the title because we wanted people to know, like, understand it was about elections, right? Yeah, I think cowardice on the Republican side. And I'm not talking about Republican constituents. I'm talking about Republicans in positions of power.
Yeah,
just complete cowards.
But again, we're getting off topic, but someone like Kevin McCarthy, who I think mm-hmm. Donald Trump supported for the speaker, but my problems with McCarthy on my issues, particularly like climate, he is one of these me too Republicans, and then me too, but not so fast. He's saying climate's a problem. We need a solution. It's a crisis. We're going to capture carbon. We're going to plant trees, and we're going to, do solar and wind and all of it. He just doesn't even want to fight the whole premise of what they're doing.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
And that's my problem with this. I cheered on the 20 rebels who fought in any way possible. Yeah,
I think that's right. And Kevin McCarthy, I think he's one who's trying to straddle the line and play both sides, which isn't working in today's world. And so I think he's being forced to kind of capitulate to the MAGA side. Thank God for
people say, oh, we're so embarrassed. I can't watch this. This isn't fantastic. The Democrats were urged to do this with AOC and Ilhan Omar. They cowered it out. So I give these Republicans full credit for what they did.
100%. I actually think President Trump would agree with that. He does support Kevin McCarthy for the speaker role, but he also recognizes what Matt Gaetz and the team did. And he fully supports that too. Yeah. So we're all very much on board with the result. And people forget, and this is the thing, we've been so anesthetized with, the parties have to be united. We have to appear united. That was never our founding fathers' intent. Our founding fathers' intent for Congress was that people would go there to argue and push for what their constituents wanted, and collectively they'd come up with an agreement. That those 20 standing up for what their constituents wanted was really the first time probably that I can think of where we actually saw Congress working the way it was intended to work, and it got the desired result. So people who are like, we don't look united. There was never, ever, ever any intention by the part of our founding fathers that everybody would be united and have talking points and, do their goose march forward on whatever issue as soon as they arrived to Congress. The purpose of Congress was to disagree on issues, argue it out, and come up with something that worked best for the entire country. So we saw that play out. I think it's a sign of life. I think it's a sign that Congress is breathing fresh air again. So I'm pleased with it.
All right. Where does that Trump campaign looking forward? You have Ron DeSantis, who is, I think, obviously the most formidable opponent, because DeSantis DeSantis was a great student of Trump, and now he's doing his version of Trumpism, and he's pretty good at it. So how does that play out, you think?
Well, I think the problem with Ron DeSantis is, so this is my assessment of it. Remember, I'm an attorney for the Trump campaign, so I'm firmly in the Trump camp. Ron DeSantis, the establishment has now recognized that rhinos will never succeed again in the Republican Party. The Republicans have spoken loud and clear. Liz Cheney was soundly defeated in her primary. They sent a message. We do not want rhinos. And the establishment is desperately trying to take down Donald Trump. And they realize they cannot do it with rhinos. So they have to do it with somebody that the MAGA base will be content with. It might not be their first choice, but it's someone they can be content with, and they can manipulate things to try to take down Donald Trump. That person is Ron DeSantis. Now, it's incumbent upon Ron DeSantis to keep his integrity and stand up for the truth and what his constituents want. The problem is he's being wooed by the establishment for the purpose of taking down Donald Trump. And they have enticed him enough that I think he's going to enter the race. He's making the moves to enter the race. In order for Ron DeSantis to take on Donald Trump, he has to join the establishment. He has to betray the MAGA base to try to take down Donald Trump. And I think that's what he's doing. So
and
I,
when you
I think
say
his
that,
biggest
you're talking more like in order to get fundraising and the donor class.
In order
yes.
That's right. In order for him to run a successful campaign, he has to get in bed with the establishment. And that it appears that that's what he's doing. So he's completely compromised himself his entire. Now, his campaign, of course, isn't going to say that. And the donors aren't going to fund that message. But that's what has to happen. So, well, I think Ron DeSantis is going to tank his career. I think he's absolutely going to ruin his career by trying to partner with the establishment. But, you know, he's a grown man. He can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing about DeSantis, if you look back at a congressional career, there was really nothing remarkable and nothing to indicate what he would become. And he really, it really COVID locked. I mean, man, I cheered him on. He was fantastic. But it'd be interesting to see, you know, I don't know his foreign policy, if he's going to be military industrial complex funded
he's
and
not
all
be able
pro
to do
Ukraine.
It. What's that? He's not going to be able to do it. I don't think he's going to survive the primaries. I don't think he appreciates what it takes to run for president. I really don't think he understands what it takes to run for president against Donald Trump. Donald Trump is like no politician we've had, at least in our lifetime. And people go, oh, Ronald Reagan. I think even Donald Trump has more showmanship, you know, funding. He brings things that Reagan doesn't. And I love Ronald Reagan. Yes. I actually really like Ron DeSantis. I'm a Florida voter. I voted for him. And if there was an election tomorrow, I'd vote for him again. I have no problem with Ron DeSantis other than the fact that he looks like he's about to make the biggest mistake of his career. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, thank you. This has been, I got to go now, but this has been with Christina Bob, author of Stealing Your Vote, The Inside Story of the 2020 Election and What It Means for 2024. Thank you so much for joining the show today, Christina.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. This is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. We'll be right back with lab-grown synthetic meat and eating insects, the update. We'll be right back.
De-weaponizing weather
with reality and perspective.
Australian researcher Bevan Dockery, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, has asked me to distribute this. Actually, he's asked a bunch of us to distribute this. All I could do is distribute a small part of it here. Fact is that 99% of the radiation absorbed by atmospheric CO2 is in the 15 micron wavelength band, micron being 1/1,000,000th of a meter in length. This equates to the lower end of the cold, far infrared spectrum with a frequency of 20.02 terahertz and a photon energy of 1.33 times 10 to the minus 20th joules. It coincides with peak radiation from a source at minus 80 degrees C, the minimum temperature occasionally reached in Antarctica. So when you take all this into account, and there's a lot more that he has put out here, how is it that CO2 is causing planetary warming? The answer is, it's not. This is TNT climate and weather watchdog, meteorologist Joe Bastardi, asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you've got.
Unlike other health concerns, mental illness is not always easy to see. Depression won't show up on an eye chart, and you won't find PTSD by looking at a thermometer. Sorting out a mental health concern takes professional diagnosis and treatment. Anxiety won't just go away under a bandage. If you or a loved one has a mental health concern, call 1-800-662-HELP for free and confidential information and treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/support.
This is the Mark Morano Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. All right, before we get into the great food reset or the great diet reset, I wanted to give you a couple other updates. As I mentioned last week, the Rebel News was in Davos, and I got to go on Ezra Levant's show this week, the head of Rebel News, the founder, and I got to praise them, first of all, and tell them how I'm jealous of what they accomplished, getting down the head of Pfizer, getting John Kerry, getting Greta Thunberg, all in the streets of Davos, and they didn't just do it like with an iPhone. Or, you know, recording on a phone. They had a crew of seven people. They had what looked like a drone hovering above, but it was a camera on a pole. They did phenomenal editing, cutting, and they had multiple reporters. And the depth, the most important thing about what they did, not that the other stuff wasn't, was the depth of questions that they kept coming. It was almost like, you know, 15, 20 questions per person. And even if the person didn't answer, they just kept coming back and asking more and more. So that's a great depth of detail and questions, because you can get a lot done just by the questions you ask and the way you frame it. Well, one of the things they got John Kerry to admit, and this is a Rebel News clip, this will be clip one, Kerry, John Kerry, the climate envoy, who got caught in 2018 flying a private jet to pick up an environmental climate award in Iceland. He was asked by an environmental journalist, why are you flying private if you're here to pick up an environmental award? And Kerry's answer was, do you know how important I am? I can't fly commercial. My work is so important. I've got to be out there. So now, because of all the blowout from that interview, this is what Kerry is now claiming. This is John Kerry in Davos at the World Economic Forum Great Reset Summit.
Secretary Kerry, do you think that the high price of natural gas is actually a helpful thing to get people to transition to a green economy?
I'd love to talk about it, but I just can't do it on the run.
Can you justify being here when you yourself take private jets? Can you answer that? But you've taken a private jet before. No, but you're taking the private jet forward to collect a climate change award. You have done that.
I fly commercially, exclusively.
There you go. I fly commercially, exclusively. John Kerry is now claiming. Now, I was on Ezra Levant's show, The Rebel News, this week, and he asked me about it. And what I said is, it's kind of like the four-pack-a-day cigarette smoker. When you ask them on a Friday, hey, how many packs a day do you smoke? And why are you still, isn't that bad for your health? And their answer is, oh, I quit smoking completely. I don't smoke anymore. What are you talking about? You're crazy. And then you're like, oh, wow, okay, wow, he stopped smoking. Until you find out that you asked that question on a Friday and they only stopped smoking Wednesday night. It's one of those things where I don't think John Kerry can just quit private jets. And so what he's saying here, if you actually listen to it, I fly commercially exclusively. I'm betting that he flew commercial to Davos in anticipation of not looking bad because of the scrutiny now, especially with Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg under a private jet controversy as well, as airports are shut down and train delays and plane delays and our transportation sector's collapsing under his term. He's flying private jets. But what Kerry's really saying is, I fly commercially lately or right now. It doesn't mean he's not going to be regularly flying in private jets. Again, he probably means since like that new year. This was done about January 17, 2 weeks into the new year. So yeah, he flies commercially exclusively given that in the new year. But you know, don't ask him about December of 2022 or something like that. Anyway, that's John Kerry. The next is clip I want to play for you is Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. Remember, he has been flying private jets, and he is overseeing our entire United States transportation sector, which includes planes, trains, automobiles, and no, not the name of the Steve Martin, what's his name? A John Candy film from 1987. But this guy is literally in charge of our transportation infrastructure, making sure everything runs on time. And here's his guide. In case you were wondering, how does this guy tick? How is he... what could make him so bad? Well, here's his clip number two, Secretary, U.S. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg.
We're looking at investments that that are fair, that contribute to equitable economic growth. We're looking at climate impacts because every transportation decision in the 21st century is a climate decision, whether we recognize it or not.
There you go. Every transportation decision in the 21st century is a climate decision. Now, that's shocking because the same day that he said this, or at least within a day or two, the Bloomberg News reported that China-made automobiles are now skyrocketing to the global leader, surpassing the United States and North Korea for number of cars manufactured and exports. China is taking over. One of the reasons? The green agenda. Electric car driving it, because China has all the rare earth mining. China's manufacturing the batteries. China's manufacturing these key components. As we go green, we go more reliance on China. So while we sit here and twaddle our thumbs talking about every decision is a climate decision, and by the way, the Biden administration has said every cabinet agency is a climate agency. Every budget is a climate budget. They're completely have taken over. This is the agenda of our day. This is the modern day Marxism, which they're imposing. This is our essentially our road to feudalism, our road to ruin. And but to say every transportation decision is a climate decision is nuts. When you look at what just happened with our planes, their goal, of course, is to collapse airline travel under a climate emergency, which Joe Biden wants to declare. It's a matter of time. As you can only fly, it's only morally justified to fly when you have a morally justified reason to fly. In terms of cars, they're banning gas-powered cars. Pete Buttigieg, I think, is about to do that. He looked with great admiration on California and the 22 states that followed that decision. Again, executive order bypassing democracy. What does banning gas-powered cars do? Create shortages. And what do shortages do? Force you onto the city bus. Let them ride the city bus instead of let them eat cake. That is what a climate decision results in. You're going to be on a bus. You're going to have vaccine mandates to get on that bus. You're going to have to wear a mask, probably, because if any Bill Gates-funded scientist at the WHO declares a pandemic, this is our future if we allow it. We cannot allow it. On the same vein, the big story this week, and I should probably spend some time next week getting deeper into this, but the Great Food Reset. I just did Fox and Friends moments before this show on Fox News Channel, literally finished up and then came down and to do this show with my segment. The Great Food Reset, lab-grown meat is being harvested in massive steel vats and edging closer to federal approval here in the U.S. and our dinner plates. As the EU approves human consumption of worms and crickets. Oh, wow, that's great. Now, just a caveat. If you want to eat lab-grown meat, fantastic. If you want to eat insects, fantastic. I'm not here to say, oh, let's ban it. I'm not banning anything. What I'm here to do is explain to you what the process of this insanity is. And the insanity is they're trying to collapse our agriculture, modern-day agriculture, going after nitrogen fertilizer to meet net zero goals. Collapse the agriculture, create food shortages, make people desperate, and they're more likely and easier to convince to eat bugs and lab-grown meat. Animal agriculture, shut that down. We have people like George Monbiot who want to end all animal agriculture. We have people like Bill Gates, America's number one farmland owner, according to NBC News, with huge sway over our agricultural policy, saying that we should switch to 100% synthetic meat, lab-grown meat. No developed country, U.S., Canada, New Zealand, Europe, should be eating real meat, essentially. We should all be eating this fake lab-grown meat. So what is lab-grown meat? It's not the Impossible Burger that you get at, at Burger King, which is even a CNN nutritionist called horrible for you because of all the fats. Those are just vegetable processed oils made to look like meat. Lab-grown meat is a slightly different animal, in quotes. And what this is they get the stem cells from a cow or a sheep, and they also get it's from an adult cow or sheep, and they also get the stem cells from an unborn cow or sheep. They put it into a giant steel vat, and they harvest it. And they add additives and even food dye and coloring, and they allow this thing to fester and grow for months in this this bioreactor is what they call it. And it's susceptible to disease, and they give it antibiotics. And it's not actually a thing. It's more of an amorphous blob. And if you're wondering what I'm talking about, if you think back to the Kevin McCarthy 1950s invasion of the body snatchers, when each person was blob was being grown. It was kind of like that. So this is like an amorphous blob, which then you can 3D print when it's all ready after a few months. And the World Economic Forum brags about printing meat, in quotes. You can print up several kilograms an hour of this meat on your printer. Hey, what's for dinner tonight, honey? Oh, I'm printing it up on the printer. Where do you see it? It's a porterhouse steak that was grown in a Bill Gates-funded lab. How does that sound? That sounds great. Can we have some crickets on top of that? And by the way, the crickets in Europe and Australia, and I did a full report on this about particularly the Australian one, kids in elementary school are given cricket-based snacks in chip form. Now, if you ate these, there's no way you'd ever know they're crickets. It's cricket ground up into flour, and they just look like your standard junk food potato chips or potato chip type snack. That's not important. It's not like the kids are eating a full cricket and chewing and crunching on it. But what it is what you call a psychop, psychological operation. Our intelligence community, of course, has mastered this. And the idea is to give these kids crickets, tell them it's crickets, even though it doesn't taste, feel, or look like crickets. Kids go home, hey, mom and dad, I ate insects today. They're not that bad. They were yummy. I want more, because they like high fat chips that are just junk, bad for you. parents are then say, oh, well, gee, my kid likes insects. I didn't know. I never even tried that. It's a psych op to introduce us to that concept. And that's the way the EU is trying to introduce. Again, I'm not opposed to people eating it, but they're introducing this powder based as a protein source replacement. The World Economic Forum wants meat to be a rare and expensive treat reserved for Davos. By the way, the Davos Forum served meat and the restaurants all served meat. But anyway, thank you very much. This has been the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. We'll be back at you next week. Listen for my Morano Minutes during the week. Thanks a lot.